This podcast contains explicit language, discussions of depression, derealization, self-harm, and suicide. Listener discretion is advised.
I was always sad. I was a sad kid. Blair, you know, cheer up, buddy. It's gonna be okay, you know. Why don't you try to go play with the other kids and make some friends? The only friend I ever really made was Conrad, because he was also sad. And we could be sad together, which was a little better.
Did you ever get close to being happy together?
Well, the only time we got close to being happy, or really it wasn't so much happy as less sad, it was when we'd go on mall walks together. Or actually, that's not right. It was sad in a meaningful way, instead of sad in a defeating way, if that makes sense. Sad people who are listening know what I mean. It's like that poem by Thomas Warton, The Pleasures of Melancholy. We both love that poem. We would read it by candlelight sometimes. There's this part about the grotto that stands upon the topmost rock of Tenerife, you know, in the tempestuous night. And the mall was our grotto. And whenever one of us got really sad, we had to count on the other one to get us up and go on a mall walk, because that would make the melancholy meaningful, the pleasures of melancholy, instead of just like quicksand.
This is the story of a coincidence, of a chance meeting between a teenage boy and a rare machine in the mallscape of America. On November 11th, 2004, 14-year-old Conrad Cliff jackhammered into the water main at the Royal Galleria near Belmont, California. In addition to turning the mall's prodigious fountain into an infernal whirlpool, he also destroyed the mall's principal attraction, an aquarium housing hundreds of fish, eels, crabs, shrimp, and 2 hammerhead sharks. 23 people drowned. 3 people were electrocuted in the arcade, 2 people were fatally attacked by one of the sharks, and over 40 people were seriously injured. And the teenager responsible was never found. No body, no trace. News outlets attributed the massacre to a video game Conrad played in the Galleria's Palace Arcade. But while many unfortunate shoppers saw bits and pieces of the madness and carnage that day, the only witness who was with Conrad from the very beginning was unable to testify.
I didn't speak for 5 years after that. They called it selective mutism, but that usually means someone talks to some people but not other people. It's an anxiety disorder, but that's not accurate because I didn't talk to anyone. I didn't even talk to myself. I didn't say a word. It was so bad that they did all these tests to try to figure out if there was something wrong with my vocal cords or my lungs. The part of me that could process and think what to say all my life up until that day, it was gone. Honestly, I don't remember most of the years. They say that language encodes memory, and meaning, right? So when I wasn't talking, it's like I wasn't even recording. I was in and out of psych hospitals. Occasionally I did some homeschool, but I never went back to high school. Past couple years, you know, I've gotten disability from time to time, but... well, now the only way I can think to make any money is if I finally tell the whole thing. Or at least what I saw of it. And I guess if I'm gonna do it, I'm gonna do it now.
This is Blair Van Auken, Conrad's best friend.
He was my only friend. And what I wish I could tell you is that him that day, that did all that stuff, that wasn't him. You know, that was he'd lost it, he'd gone crazy. But I'd be lying if I said that, because in little ways, I'd seen that part of him before. It was always there. It was always there for both of us. Sometimes people are sad because they hate themselves. And sometimes, when suddenly everyone else and the whole world hates you too, it feels a little good. Because it proves things would be better if you'd never been around. Or maybe it feels good because it proves that nothing's leading to anything. It's just a spark between blacknesses. There's nothing on either end.
I'm Celia Maddox for KGEI Redwood Shores, and this is the first of a 6-part series on madness, machines, and melancholy in the mallscape of America. This is Mall Walk. Episode 1, Escalator Down.
I said before that I don't remember that much about the years after that day, but to be honest, I don't remember too much about the years before it either. I never had a great memory. Maybe I did once, but at this point, it's all collapsed down into this single point, which is the mall. That mall. The Royal Galleria. I did used to go there when I was younger with my mom. She would take me on a lot of errands. I remember she would play Madonna in the car, Borderline, Lucky Star. So, let me try to paint a picture. The outside of the mall, it's just like a big square building, like a white box. It's like a tomb. And it's in this big parking lot. And a lot of the time, it's like half empty. So, it's kind of just black asphalt everywhere. Off behind it is the foothills. And it's all nature. And sometimes it's foggy. The mist almost gets kind of pink coming off from the coast. And the coast is away over those hills in like Half Moon Bay and, you know, middle Highway 1 towns. So the anchor store of the mall on the second floor up the hill was Kmart. And I remember being in the Kmart that's one of the only early memories I really hold on to. It blends together, you know, on the second level and the big Kmart with the blue light flashing. But you enter through the second level. It's It's kind of hard to explain. The mall is... Okay, so the mall was built up against this hill, so you can enter through the Kmart, but then you go down the escalator out of the Kmart, down into the main mall, because the main mall is down. It's down below on the other side of the hill, where it dips down into this pit, and it only has one small entrance. And that's why, because it's downhill, that's why all the water... But you could start in the Kmart. Most people start in the Kmart.
Stop by the men's and boys' department for all your winter needs. Choose among a wide assortment of flannel shirts, sweaters, and outerwear, all available in new styles and colors. Our police tops and pants, boys, made in the USA, and all available at a great, great cost. Don't forget to use our strategic mail. And thank you for shopping.
I remember getting lost there once when I was very small. I don't know how old I was. I couldn't have been lost for very long. My mom got ahead of me in the aisle, and suddenly I was alone. And I looked for her, but I looked for anyone. I remember like no one was there. It was like the whole Kmart was empty. I swear, it felt empty. Maybe I never left that one aisle, but I remember looking around and it felt that way. It can't have been long, but it felt like forever. You know,
so Conrad and I, one of the first things we did when we became friends was we categorized all our bad feelings, all our different depressions and anxieties. We put them into different specific categories so we could communicate better. And it was one of the first things that brought us together. The main one was the big, ugly feeling. That was serious, major depression. The feeling like you want to lie down on the floor. Like you're heavy and drowning. And when you go to therapy for depression, like we both did, they teach you to localize your emotions, like figure out where your emotion is in your body so that you can identify it as a physical sign of emotion, and so you can connect it to your body. And the big ugly feeling, that's in the deep stomach and the throat. It's like the digestive system. It's like a gross hunger, like you had an upset stomach but you were hungry at the same time. Or like you got hungry, but all you had to eat were breath mints. We also had, the little doom feeling, and we localized that like a flutter in the stomach, like when you go down a hill. There was the sharp jealousy, which is like pulsing heat in the neck and face, and you get sweaty and hot behind your ears. And the slip grip feeling, which is like you feel like you're dissociating, like your body's driving itself. But the worst feeling of all of them was what I called the lost in Kmart feeling. And it was the feeling I felt that day when I couldn't find anyone. And all I could see was the blue light flashing. Sometimes I still get that feeling. I wake up, I'm in the dark, I'm alone. It doesn't matter how old I am, I'm still that little kid lost in the Kmart. I'm still looking for my mom, for anyone, still following the blue light. And then I remember that day they called my name on the speaker and I went to the front and my mom was there waiting for me. But the feeling didn't go away. Not right away. It's a feeling like I shrink down small. Everything around me gets enormous. Like the aisles of the Kmart are like skyscrapers. And I'm small, and I'm damp, and I'm cold. ¶¶ remember that day with Conrad, we came down from the Kmart together on the escalator. There was an escalator that fed down right through the floor of the Kmart, like down, like, you know, like one of those portal in the floor, down toward the main mall. As soon as you pass the first layer and you're just beyond the Kmart, you're out in the open, you just see escalators everywhere. They're crisscrossing in every direction. And even in the distance, in the mirrors, because the sides of the escalators are mirrors, there's more escalators somewhere around the corner that you can't even see. And the escalator we were on, the main one going down out of the Kmart, you'd go into these brief, like, corridors where you were closed off in neon-lit darkness. They were, like, neon. And then you go out again, and I remember, so there was this girl down below us. We were both 14 that day, Conrad and I, and she looked about 14. She was in a Catholic schoolgirl outfit. I was looking down at her, and I remember she looked back up at us and smiled. It's worth mentioning, I guess, that Conrad was like really tall, bulky dude. He'd been a wrestler for a while until he'd had to quit the team because of some of the issues we've been talking about. And I was, of course, like, super lanky guy, long hair. It's kind of greasy. I was not short, but I looked short next to him. People said we made a sort of an odd pair. I mean, me looking like this little anemic waif and, you know, him being this big, muscular, jock-looking type.
How did you two become friends?
It's hard to say. I can't pinpoint the first time, but if I had to guess, I think we both met in the music room. Yeah, I think that was the first time. Or at least the first time we really noticed each other. He was drumming, and I came in and strummed some power chords on my Fender, and we jammed for a sec. I mean, nothing crazy complicated. I think I might have been playing Nirvana. We talked about starting a band. And after that, we'd get together, and we wouldn't really play music, but we'd listen to music. We'd share a pair of headphones, you know, one ear each. We both really liked Captain Jazz and Saves the Day.
So Conrad was a big, muscular guy, and you were kind of a skinny punk kid, you said. When the girl on the escalator looked back, did you worry that she was looking at him?
I didn't worry, but I did wonder if she was looking at him. Either way, I don't think he noticed her. I mean, I noticed her. I remember that very clearly. Especially with what happened later.
On November 11th, 2004, Blair and Conrad arrived at the Royal Galleria a little after 11 a.m. Blair can't recall who drove them to the mall, nor which of them had first suggested going for one of their ceremonial mall walks. Blair's memory of the story begins on the escalator.
So after she looked back at us and smiled, I couldn't stop looking down at her. I was used to seeing a lot of those girls in Catholic uniforms around the mall because St. Agatha's is right nearby, but I didn't see any other Catholic schoolgirls but her that day. I put a lot of energy on her there, at the start there. I was trying to figure her out. I was like, I felt like I was looking at myself in her. I mean, sometimes I felt that way. Like a person is a mirror. But that was probably all in my head. We were on that escalator for a while. I remember Conrad said something about a kid getting his toes stuck in the metal teeth at the top and it chewing through his foot and the blood pouring down the steps all the way to the Orange Julius below. He would talk about gushy stuff like that a lot. When he got in a certain mood, it wasn't a good sign. It wasn't the kind of sad I wanted us to have that day. We called that one the kill everyone feeling, which it meant you had itchy hands. I probably should have given it more attention at that moment, but I was trying to ignore it. I was trying to bring us back to the pleasures of melancholy, which was the best kind of feeling of all. That's the kind of feeling we always tried to have at the mall. I guess, like, to try to describe the feeling, it was sort of, like, satirical. Very teenage, like we're too good for the mall. Everything is a big joke. It's a copy of a copy. It's a facsimile, whatever. And yet, the mall was where we wanted to be all the time. It was the only place we wanted to be. It's the only place I can remember us being. It was easy at that age for us to sort of suspend irony over everything while still experiencing it. I think it was me who had suggested that mall walk. Obviously, we went on a few, but that one, the one, I think it was me who suggested it. I think he was the one who'd been in a deep one, on the deep down. I think I was trying to pull him up out of something. Or rather, down into something. To turn the feeling out of ego, down into sublimity, down the escalator, into our routine, you know, like... It's like a place that isn't a place. So I looked down and the girl was gone somehow. She must have taken a few steps. She must have disappeared into the mall. I wanted to rush ahead and catch up with her, but it would have been too obvious. Besides, Conrad was saying something else about an escalator trap where suddenly the steps like go flat and the whole thing turns into a slide, like a villain trap or something. I think I remembered it from like an old cartoon. It's weird that there's so much about being on that escalator that I can remember, but there's so much before and after that I can't remember at all. Those hours on that day, that mall walk, I remember it all like... It's like the only clear window in a world of fog. That's why I feel so fucked up all the time. It's all just pink fog. I feel like we were going down a long time. I know I keep saying that, but really. I guess I had this feeling like something was gonna happen, but in a good way, for once. I guess it's obvious to explain that when you're clinically depressed, you usually get some anxiety too. I mean, most days I would have the little doom feeling, not that I minded too much, because that feeling is honest. It's better to have the little doom feeling than the big ugly feeling. Some people might disagree, but the big ugly feeling, as I said, it's quicksand, man. And that's the feeling we were trying to outpace that day. I think he was the one having it, but yeah, on the escalator, I remember I was having like the opposite of the little doom feeling. I was having like the little hope feeling. Or maybe those two are really the same feeling. Dreadful. I still felt sad, but like I was getting... I think I still felt sad and tired. I don't remember a day where I didn't. But, like, I was getting closer to the pleasures of melancholy. The meaningful sad. Sublimity. Like, something might happen out of it. You know, physical equilibrium. Maybe that girl was part of it. Maybe the mall was part of it. Like, maybe it was leading to something. And it was. It was. But when you finally emerge out of that corridor at the bottom of the escalator, the main mall just sort of occurs to you all at once. So the Royal Galleria, you know, it's themed like a castle. That's part of the problem. That's why they think the game hit him so hard, because the game was also about a castle. All the walls are painted to look like big blocks of stone, and there's a big archway over the top of the escalator with fake grating that looks like a drawbridge has been lifted up. And I remember Conrad, he said something about it was a real drawbridge and they closed it at night. And best of all, on that last stretch of escalator, you go over the moat. Because, yeah, there was this moat that went around the whole main floor. It was visible in parts, it disappeared in other parts behind walls, but you knew it was the same continuous moat because you'd sometimes see the same, like, koi fish swimming through it in different parts. It was sort of a preview for the aquarium at the other end, so the moat, like, ran down toward the aquarium. You know, it was sort of all leading to that, but keeping the medieval vibe at the same time. And so, like, so the escalator passes down over the moat. So you look down, you see the koi fish swimming, and the music coming out of the speakers would change to, like, this you know, fanfare trumpet sound. Like you were being announced, like you were visiting the king. And then you step off, and first thing you see is Orange Julius. In fact, as soon as you step off the escalator, you're just automatically in line for Orange Julius. You have to step left to get out of line, to the left. And to the left is the security kiosk, and the security guards wear these corny outfits that are sewed to look like armor, so they look like knights, and so they all have name tags that say, like, Sir Travis and Sir Kurt. Just past the security kiosk, there's this big exit sign, and then the wall sort of semicircles back, and there's the carousel. And above the carousel, there was this big clock. It looked like a sundial, you know, to keep with the medieval theme. And I always remember that the second hand of the clock moved at exactly the same pace as the carousel. And it gave me a feeling, like a little smooth feeling. I think nowadays we call it, like, oddly satisfying. So we're automatically standing in line for Orange Julius. And I remember there was a girl in uniform standing in front with a tray of little plastic cups full of yellow smoothies. She was handing out samples. I think they were called, like, Lemon Lazarus or something. We just got standard Orange Juliuses or Julii. So we're standing there with two Orange Juliuses, and we're sort of trying to stay out of the way of the people getting off the escalator. We're sort of looking at the carousel, and I remember Conrad started crying. Yeah. I think we both had memories of that carousel from when we were kids, but it had been a long time since we rode it ourselves. It had a lot of horses, similarly medieval themed, with helmets and scabbards. And one of the horses was a unicorn, and little kids would always fight over who got to ride the unicorn. So I remember I was drinking my Julius, and Conrad started crying, and I wondered, was it the big ugly feeling, or just a little nostalgia? Or was he really getting the pleasures of melancholy already? It was too early in the mall walk for that. He fell down on his knees. He touched the ground. I kneeled down next to him. People were walking around us. I grabbed his shoulder. I leaned in and he was whispering, "I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry." It would have made sense later in the day. But he hadn't done anything wrong. Not yet.
As Blair kneeled beside Conrad on the floor in front of the carousel, a security guard noticed them for the first time.
I had seen quite a few people act up at the mall in my time. Kids were always either high or drunk, shoplifting.
This is Officer Wes Barker. He now works for the San Mateo Police Department, but 18 years ago, he was a security guard at the Royal Galleria. He was the guard stationed at the drawbridge kiosk when Blair and Conrad got off the escalator.
I mean, I can't even believe I remember it. And the only reason I do remember it is because of what happened later. If what happened later didn't happen, I never would have remembered this kid at all. I mean, kid down on his knees crying. I just figured he had his heart broken or something. His friend next to him seemed absolutely, you know, beset too. So I thought, I'll leave these guys alone. I really didn't think anything of it. And then the one kid who was crying, he threw his drink at the carousel.
And he raised up his Orange Julius, and he chucked it toward the carousel, and I was like, chill out, what are you doing?
And so there I am, I'm heading over to the carousel, you know, I'm ready to kick these kids out.
So I saw security coming toward us, and I grabbed Conrad, and I just yanked him up and started running.
And then before I got there, they'd already run off, so...
He was kind of hobbling behind me, he was still crying. We went past the carousel, past the clock, around this sort of middle planter box that had little hedgerows in it, around this bench, and then I just pulled him into the nearest store, which happened to be the body shop.
I truly didn't realize that was the same kid until I had pieced it together later, the kid with the jackhammer. I had no idea that was the same kid. I would have done something if I had known, but as far as the situation at hand, I just called the custodial staff and I had them clean up the mess at the carousel. I do remember there were a bunch of parents there and they were really upset. I had to calm everybody down. It was you know, a typical situation. You know, we're trained for de-escalation, so obviously we were able to calm them in the moment, make sure that we could all sort of move on with our day. I come in and do a full cleanup of the situation. I was able to speak to some of the parents there that were, of course, upset. I know some children, there was some splashback from the drink, and so some children were affected by that. Of course, we had them all cleaned up. We took care of the whole thing. Free carousel rides for everybody.
I realized right away we didn't look like we belonged in the body shop, but we stayed in there for a second. And I remember I looked at the little bath oil beads. I remember the lady at the cash register was looking at us, but we stayed a little longer until Conrad stopped crying. And I think I told him, you know, we're going to have a good time. But also I knew that security guard was probably going to be looking for us, so we needed to be a little less conspicuous if we were going to stay at the mall. And I wanted us to stay at the mall. I felt like he needed it. But it would have been better if we'd gotten caught right then. It would have been better if we had gotten kicked out. So after a bit, we left the body shop. I think Conrad had dabbed some oil under his neck because I remember he smelled like melon cucumber for the rest of the day. Right outside, I'm not joking, the first two clothing shops you see were a Hot Topic directly facing across from an Abercrombie & Fitch. We always thought that was really funny. Like, first thing you see, walking down the first mallway on the main floor, you got either Hot Topic or Abercrombie & Fitch. Like, those are the only two things you can be, like, for a teenager. Like, pick one. These are the two types of teenagers. It was around that time I started wondering about the girl again. I wondered which of the two stores she might be in. She'd been in a school uniform, of course, so I had no idea if she was more of a Hot Topic girl or Abercrombie & Fitch girl. All I had to go on was her eye makeup, which was dark and kind of flared at the edges. I figured she was probably a little more of a Hot Topic girl, or at least I hoped so. So we went into Hot Topic. I was also just like thinking that'd be a good place to get, you know, different clothes, maybe hoodies, so we could hide our faces, be less recognizable to security. We browsed for just a sec. I grabbed a Tinkerbell hoodie and a Jack Skellington, and I dragged Conrad into one of the changing rooms. We went into one changing room. He was saying he wanted the Skellington, you know, because Halloween had just passed, and we were right between Halloween and Christmas. It was perfect. And I had to wear the Tinkerbell. You know, I think I said, like, you gotta believe in me, or I'll disappear. And then I asked him if he was having the big ugly feeling, or the sharp jealousy feeling, or what the fuck was going on with them. He said he was having the sundown feeling, like the day is ending and it's getting dark and all the things you planned for the day are over. Like you just got twice as heavy. We both got that feeling a lot, especially in November. I think he maybe got that feeling from looking at the carousel. Seeing all the kids acting happy, going around and around, and with the clock ticking at the same speed right above them. So we changed into the hoodies and pulled the hoods up and cinched them tight, and it honestly made us look a lot sketchier, but at least it was harder to see our faces. I remember we bought them while we were wearing them. They scanned the tags with a little gun while we're still wearing them. And I think I paid for them. Yeah, I had money that day for whatever reason. Not too much, but enough. Because I don't remember Conrad paying for anything when we were together. Although, I guess he did have some money because later on he just kept feeding quarters into that game. We left the Hot Topic. We did a quick check down the hallway for security. And then we kept walking down toward the fountain.
I want to pause here to describe the general layout of the mall through which our story travels. I spent a good deal of time correlating Blair's description with an old floor plan of the Royal Galleria. The mall still stands, but has been a dead building for almost 20 years. The mall never opened for business again after that day. Past the escalator, the moat, the drawbridge, past the Orange Julius, the carousel, the clock, there was indeed a body shop. A Hot Topic right across from an Abercrombie & Fitch, a Limited 2, an Express, PacSun, and several other clothing shops, followed by gift shops. The Lego store, the Discovery Channel store, and Sharper Image. In our next episode, we will go further down the hallway to the central fountain where several other hallways served by other escalators converged. For this leg of the mall walk, Blair and Conrad found themselves in the northern corridor, and Blair, feeling confidently disguised in his new Tinkerbell hoodie, turned his attention to finding the object of his little hope feeling, the girl from the escalator.
It's probably not a healthy feeling. And at this age, I can see that a lot of scary men probably follow the same feeling, and that's why the world can be so scary for women, but I put everything on finding that girl. It's so easy at that age to put everything on some random girl. That brief smile and her looking back up at us. I put so much on that. I know it's not a healthy feeling, but she became my quest. I told Conrad about her and how I wanted to find her, and he didn't remember her. I'd figured he hadn't noticed her, even though she might have been looking at both of us, or just at him. I described her, but he'd been too busy thinking about bloody escalator accidents to remember. At that point, he seemed a little better. He was okay with helping me look, so, you know, we went into Forever 21. That store was bigger, so we looked around, but we tried to make it seem like we weren't looking for anyone. Didn't want to make it too obvious, even though we didn't really look like we belonged in there. We hovered around the dressing rooms for a bit. I was watching the girls who came out. You know, none of them were her. But they started to notice after a little bit, so, you know, we felt like menaces, which we were. I do feel bad about it now. It's weird. It's just teenage boy shit. I wonder if there's a way to stop it. I don't know how you fix that problem. After a little bit, we left. We checked a few other stores. I remember we went into Claire's, which was mostly girls a little bit younger than us, and I did see one girl who I knew, and I got us out of there real quick before she saw us, because the mall walk was not usually about talking to people who would recognize us. It was about... So, we went into Express after that. You know, we went to the underwear section, and we were looking at the thongs. I'm a little embarrassed to admit that, but, you know, teenage boy shit. I was sort of hoping, in my own fantasy, that I'd find her in the thong section. I didn't. It was around then Conrad said that the security guard might still be looking for us, so maybe a good idea was to go down to the Megaplex, see a movie, and by the time we got out, maybe there'd been a shift change, maybe there'd be a new security guard. You know, that was a pretty good idea.
No, well, you see, I wasn't looking for them at that point. We had a different problem where the carousel was going backwards and was making all the children sick. It was a nightmare, honestly, and I had to deal with that. It's honestly ridiculous to think that they had spent so much energy trying to hide from me because they were not on my radar at all. I had bigger fish to fry. I suppose I probably should have been on the lookout for them. I really should have. I really wish that I had been. And I didn't see him again until later. I didn't see him until I had located his position in the pipeworks hallway below the trapdoor.
Somewhere in that time, the dynamic shifted. I wasn't the one taking care of Conrad anymore. He started taking care of me. He told me I was being kind of demented. I told him I had the big adventure feeling, which felt like a tingling in your spine, like at the back of your neck. And he told me we'd have a better mall walk if we didn't put it all on one girl. He told me we should just let the mall lead us where it wanted to lead us. And I thought he was right.
He convinced me. But I didn't know at that time where the mall was going to lead us. Where it was going to lead him. If I had known. But how could I have?
It would be easy to jump ahead at this point in the story, to the Palace Arcade, to the strange video game that the media blamed for much of what followed, to the jackhammer, the flood, the hammerhead shark, and Conrad's ultimate disappearance. But such briefs have already been written. You're free to go read them. This podcast aims to dissect the psychology between two teenage boys who had gone to the mall for an exercise in melancholy. We are a nation of strange atrocities perpetuated largely by mentally ill boys. In slowing our pace, in taking in the mall walk, we can best live within the motives of our perpetrator and his friend. But I must warn listeners that even when all the veins of this body of crime are unwound, clear motives are hard to come by. It is a path with many entrances and exits in which one can become terribly lost. And it is in that inert landscape of a dead mall that we will find ourselves at the end, when the final avenue is traveled. Blair and Conrad exited the Hollister and went down past many other stores toward the fountain, an orange-lit multi-spigot array meant to resemble a flaming cauldron. Here, at the Galleria's central meeting spot, several other stories would interact with that of our two ill-fated boys. A pack of bullies, an old man with Alzheimer's, and even the girl for whom Blair had been questing, the girl from the escalator. This fateful convergence, next time, on episode 2, The Crucible of Creation. Mall Walk is a production of KGEI Redwood Shores. In this episode, you've heard the voices of Blair Van Auken and Officer Wesley Barker. Music for this episode is by Power PCME, Disconscious, KG Hino, and Nine Inch Nails, Cat System Corp., and Harry Gibbons. For episodes, show notes, and a complete track listing, visit our website, mallwalkpodcast.com. I'm Celia Maddox.